within that footprint, you'd be empowering any builder, contractor, and disenfranchising myself as a constituent, because my house would now be on an easement, and the owner, the builder, or whatever you want to call it, would no longer have to, in good faith, negotiate to have my place removed. If a mobile home park, you know, this is a special one of 440 units, you'd remove from negotiations 100 and some of your constituents. I think if someone wants to put a bike path in part of their plan, and as we watch the construction going on in Vancouver, that's something that someone else can figure out in another time. But to empower somebody by creating an easement by the city, you're destroying, you know, our opportunity to live there and to negotiate in good faith at another time. So I ask you to please include that there is no, you know, easements for anywhere on the island. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Yeah, we've got number 38 on the list as one of the ones we're considering. Thank you. Okay.
Number 27, Rob Lefebvre, 28, Eric Hovey, 29, Mark Whitlow. They'll be followed by Mary Mitzel, Michael Robinson, and Rick Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Bob Lefebvre, and I'm a co-founder and a broker with Commercial Realty Advisors. Wanted to speak on Amendment 28A on drive-thrus. I urge you to support Commissioner Saltzman's Option B. The Option A from the PSC makes an arbitrary distinction of for zoning east of 80th Avenue that makes no sense. Option C from Mayor Hales would still prohibit all new drive-thrus for coffee, banking, pharmacies, and groceries in the CE zones. I think we all can agree drive-thrus do serve elderly, handicapped, and families with small children. And they're also critical to the business sales when people put them in. And actually, they do reduce the need for parking, which we heard a lot about today. I also urge you to relook at where you are applying the CE zoning. The comp plan policies say we need to facilitate the retention and development of grocery stores, provide an adequate amount of land to accommodate grocery stores at all levels of affordability, and especially in underserved areas of Portland. Grocery stores need thousands of customers to support them, the vast majority of which come by car. The existing grocery stores have asked for CE zoning, which is the only auto-accommodating zone, and also we propose dozens of other sites that might lead to redevelopment so we can add more grocery stores into some of the unserved areas. And these are virtually all ignored at the PSC level. The result will be it will be harder to redevelop existing grocery stores, and we submitted a number of case studies. New stores, especially affordable ones, are less likely to develop in underserved areas, and there will be millions of unnecessary vehicle miles traveled per year as urban residents drive to the outskirts to shop for affordable goods. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. My name is Eric Hovey, Economic and Development Consultant. I'm speaking on behalf of the Retail Task Force in support of more explicit recognition of the auto-accommodating function of the CE zone and in support of Commissioner Saltzman's Amendment 28 Option B proposal related to drive-thrus, both to reduce nonconformity. With respect to the CE zone, we are requesting that the text of the zone purpose statement be revised to more explicitly state the CE is the place for auto-accommodating uses to facilitate new development and redevelopment. We further request CE zoning for existing auto-accommodating areas and for existing grocery stores. Adding more auto-accommodating zoning is needed to avoid food deserts and nonconformity for existing grocery stores. This approach is also consistent with plan policy 6.16.F, recognizing that 80% of trips now are by car, allowing for a transition over time as market conditions, together with transit patronage and increased density of development, take hold, especially in East Portland. I'm also speaking in support of the Option B proposal to permit drive-through facilities in the CE zone while continuing to allow existing drive-throughs in the CM1, 2, and 3 zones to expand and rebuild. Our research makes it clear that drive-thrus, including quick service uses, are important to auto-dependent customers. As for parents with children, seniors, the disabled, and even tech-savvy millennials, drive-thrus also are integral to continued retail business innovation. This is the case for pharmacy as well as grocery pickup operations, trends that are likely to continue in the years ahead. We urge your support of the Saltzman Option B proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor, members of council, Mark Whitlow. Again, I'm here on behalf of the Retail Task Force and the International Council of Shopping Centers. I've given you another letter, the first point of which is to support, again, Commissioner Saltzman's amendment to Option B to 28A for drive-through facilities. We like that as well as the other reasons stated, for the reason that it does the best job of preventing these existing facilities from becoming non-conforming in a way that they can't remodel, rebrand, or redevelop. So non-conformity has been a big issue of ours for the whole time, but skipping over to grocery stores, we're finding some solutions for the non-conformity to drive-throughs, but we're leaving our grocery stores, particularly our middle market groceries, Fred Meyer, Safeway, Albertsons. They have 15 stores. They've asked to have CE zoning. They didn't get but one of them. They're all becoming non-conforming. That doesn't help our existing food desert problem. These people need to redevelop it just like anyone else, rebrand every 5 years, update to ADA standards, et cetera, so on. They're right between two hard places, and they need your relief. You really don't want to make them preserve the status quo for the next 30 years and not be able to put new capital in there and maintain their auto-dependency character. So the letter states all kinds of reasons, but it's hinged primarily on the policy plan policies that we had you work with you to adopt earlier, 6.16F, which is, again, avoiding nonconformity, 4.85 grocery stores, and 6.67 retail development. Those things, you've already made the decisions to do a better job in the mixed-use zones project than the PSC has recommended that you do.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Next, please. Number 30, Mary Mizell. 31, Michael Robinson. 32, Rick Johnson. They'll be followed by Ty Wyman, Carol Cheserek, and Susan Lindsay.
Okay. Welcome. Good afternoon. Whoever would like to go first.
Actually, I'm not Mary, and that's my wife, but she's asked me to speak instead. So I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, and I'm saying this because there's a saying in our scriptures that says that the king is the representative of God. So in this particular circumstance, you're as close to being the king as I can understand. So I offer you my respects as a result of your honorable position. So I don't have a political agenda except to say that if you can call on the name of God as much as possible, that will assist everyone in making the correct decision in all circumstances. There's another aphorism that says, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He said, Krishna is the supreme controller over everything. Everyone's a controller over something, but Krishna is the controller over everything. So if we give him that opportunity to act, then we're making the correct decision, no matter what the rationale or the passion behind the decision is. So actually, I'm just speaking on a particular piece of property. My wife and I own a property on 82nd Avenue. We understand that's a mixed-use civic corridor. And somehow or other, under the comprehensive plan zoning map, our property was included with this change in the property next to us. Only it wasn't included. The CE was assigned to the red.
It wraps around you there.
Around us. Yeah. So then we're simply requesting to continue the CE zoning to include our parcel as well. This is Sandy Boulevard.
Okay.
This is
What's the address or what's the cross street?
The address is 3844 Northeast 82nd. It's between Sandy and Fremont.
Okay. Thank you. And are you leaving that copy with us, or you can? But
yes.
We've got the address. That's all we need to work from.
No, I'm happy to leave these.
Okay. Should
I?
Yes, just leave it with with her, and we'll get copies that way. Thank you very much, and appreciate your thoughts. And we need all the help we can get around here. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, Mayor, members of council. My name is Michael Robinson. I'm here on behalf of Providence Health and Services. Providence supports Amendment 51. That's the TDM amendment. We may support it for different reasons than others we've heard talk today, but we think it does two important things. One, it provides clear direction to the bureaus that are going to be working with the public to develop the administrative rules, that the folks who have an interest in the outcome of those rules are involved in the process. We think that's important not just for the institutions, but for our neighbors as well, and we appreciate that clear direction the amendment offers. The second thing we appreciate is the portion of the amendment that says that the administrative rules ought to effectively implement the land use regulations and make sure that you have appropriate development review standards. One of the things that we and the other institutions have testified about is our concern that through this very long process, we're going to end up with something that, while well-intentioned, will result in more land use appeals than we need and difficult standards to meet. So we think Amendment 51 does a good job of directing staff to avoid those outcomes. In any event, we appreciate it being before council today, and we hope council will adopt it when you deliberate next week. We thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for working on it with us. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Rick Johnson, and I live in Southeast Portland, and I'm here to testify against removing the minimum parking standards. The position that this is going to make housing more affordable is a red herring. Market rate is what determines rents. What is driving Portland's housing rents is the fact that 100 people a day are arriving in Portland looking for housing. Demand far outstrips supply, and we'll continue to do so for a while. While I agree that affordability must be addressed, blaming it on parking minimums is wrong, and removing them only decreases the livability in the surrounding neighborhoods. In Inner Buckman, where I live, we still have many families with children. Families still use cars, and I fear that a lack of parking will drive them out of the inner city neighborhoods. The lack of families changes the neighborhood's character, taking out the joy and innocence of children. Presently, Portland lacks the necessary transportation infrastructure, making it possible to efficiently move a family from A to B on public transit. For this reason, we need the parking minimums to remain and a slower transition out of cars to take place. With less than 2 weeks of notice on the amendments, the lack of public process around this issue is appalling. No local studies on the effects of removing parking minimums, only the parking study prepared by Dan Evans and Associates, a civil engineering and traffic firm, that stated the following about apartment dwellers. 28% do not own or lease cars. The remaining 70% own at least one car. Furthermore, putting this in as an amendment at the last minute shows a lack of public debate and scientific input. And I wish we had more time to debate this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Number 33, Ty Wyman. 34, Carol Chisarek. 35, Susan Lindsay. They'll be followed by Doug Klotz, Ernie Bone, Richard Urin.
Okay, Mr. Wyman, I think you're first, if you're ready.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Appreciate very much your time and attention this day. And I don't intend to take up all my 2 minutes. Ty Wyman here as attorney for Dr. Nada Razuli. Dr. Razuli owns the property address at 6141 Southwest Canyon Court. Accordingly, I rise in support of Amendment 23. Very much appreciate Commissioner Saltzman for putting it on the list. The Amendment 23 would rezone 6141 Southwest Canyon Court to R5. That would correspond with a plan designation change that you approved earlier this year from R20 to R5. We understand that staff opposes the proposal due to concern about transit access to transit. And interestingly, we addressed this issue directly in testimony during the April-May plan amendment process, and I refer you now to the letter of my letter of today.
that demonstrates the proximity to transit. It is a well under 15-minute walk that is supported by sidewalks and crosswalks. The subject property is improved with a sidewalk along one of its frontages. Question was raised about improvement of the second frontage, and we submitted testimony from traffic engineer Chris Clameau to that effect, that upon development of the site under R5, sidewalks and indeed full half-street improvements would be required. Importantly, we submitted that testimony this spring. We didn't hear any response from PBOT, so we're not aware of any rebuttal to a point that we've already made in the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Council. I'm Carol Chesarek. I'm currently serving as president of Forest Park Neighborhood Association, and I'm here today on behalf of the neighborhood. I submitted email testimony earlier today with background information and letters from affected property owners, and you've been handed a subset of that information. I'm here to ask you to approve Amendment 48 and delete another Trail to Nowhere from your major public trails map. I want to thank Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz for moving this item forward. If you look at the second page of the handout, there's a copy of the Metro West Side Trail map with some additions that I put on this morning. And just so you're aware, the challenge is how to get from the purple squiggle on the right, which is the trail in Forest Park, to the purple brown squiggle on the left, which is the trail in Washington County. The issue is this has to go through private property and unincorporated Multnomah County, and we don't have a final trail alignment there. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners requested further study because there are a lot of different issues affecting this trail alignment. One of the most important is that the proposal would pass through a set of private properties that unanimously opposed the trail, and those are outlined in red on your map with the property owners dropped in there. Those property owners also have a homeowners association, and the HOA CCNRs prohibit public trails. So you need a majority of that HOA to support a change, and we think that's very unlikely to happen. The yellow box on the map points to the trail segment that we want removed. Metro fervently insists that they do not condemn private land for public trails. The proposed major public trails map currently includes this trail segment from Skyline down Northwest Saltzman Road. City policy requires that those trails be built, but what you get is a trail that leads on the street down a very steep hill about a quarter of a mile into a dead-end cul-de-sac without any identified practicable trail connection or outlet. So what happens? Your trail user follows the trail, and you can't see where you're going at the top of the hill. So you walk down and down and down and down, and then where do you go? There's no sign to tell you. There's no outlet. So what do? You hunt around. It's supposed to be here. And what you end up with is frustrated trail users who are going to have to turn around and go back up the hill, but probably not until they've poked around on that private property trespassing, looking to figure out where this trail is supposed to be. And some of these property owners have valuable livestock. So we don't see any upside to including this trail segment on your public trails map now. The street is a public right-of-way. It's not going away. You can easily designate it for this trail later if we do figure out a connection for it. So I'm asking you to please approve Amendment 48 to remove this trail segment down Northwest Saltzman Road. We don't believe that the trail should be designated until you've got a final trail alignment and a right-of-way connection. We don't need another trail to nowhere. We would be happy to work with city staff to identify a more feasible route. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, Ms. Lindsay, welcome.
Mayor Hales and commissioners, I'm here to make a can you hear me?
Yeah, just put your name in the record, Susan.
Oh, sorry, Susan Lindsay. I'm here to make a little amendment of my own because I was here recently testifying on the mixed-use zone project as a member of that committee. And at that time, I was unaware that a change had happened that I want to make sure that I bring to your attention. We had a really great process with that committee. And the minimums that were set for the CM2 in our area, in Inner Southeast, were 45, 55, 55 being with a bonus. Well, with the new discussion discussions around inclusionary zoning, that seems to have now, everything has now shifted so that everything's 55 and then there's an extra 5 feet for the ground floor. So everything's, so now everything's kind of turned into a 60-foot apartment building, which could conceivably really turn into an enormous number of canyons through inner southeast and even into the residential areas, because if you look at where the CM2 is, there's some CG that goes up Stark. And so I have a concern about that. So I want to make sure that those bonuses stay true bonuses and aren't just sort of waved away with this idea that since everyone is going to include some form of affordable housing, that we don't have to worry about the height anymore. I think we do have to worry about the height. And second, of course, I have to say something about parking. And what I want to say about parking is this, that with all due respect, Mayor Hales, I think this is not really the best thing for the city. I'm very concerned that removing the parking minimums, that what's going to take place is that it's going to hurt working people, the working class. What we have seen is in the apartment buildings that have been built without parking, we have not noticed that those units are more affordable. In fact, they're just as unaffordable as ever. And I'm very concerned that if you remove this, that you are, in fact, removing an important negotiating piece, and that we're setting up a city once again with inequity, so that some neighborhoods of means and affluence will have apartment buildings with parking, and that the other neighborhoods will not, and that this will not benefit the whole, but in fact will benefit the few. And so I'm very concerned about this. And while I appreciate and have listened very carefully to all the testimony of many young people saying that this doesn't need to happen and all of the reasons for that, having a residence very close to Revolution Hall, I can assure you that young people in droves are still driving cars and are still parking everywhere. So, and we hear this time and time again, concerns about parking. I know that many working class people are not here today, are not represented, but I wanted to speak out for them because our transportation infrastructure is just not there yet to support those people, and they deserve to be able to get around just as much as everyone else can. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
And next, if we could have, please, Doug Klotz, Eric Vaughn, and Wendy Chung, and they will be followed by Richard Uren, Mike Connors, and Jill Warren.
Okay, good afternoon. This is the last hearing on the comp plan, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. I support Amendment 34 to remove parking requirements.
What's your name in the record, Doug?
Oh, Doug Klotz. And we've heard a lot about the housing crisis yesterday, and this amendment is another tool we can use to solve it. This does not ban parking. It just allows the developer or building owner to decide how many parking spaces are necessary, how many parking spaces are called for. And when we implement the parking centers and corridors parking toolkit, which you're going to hear about on December 22nd, that will be the key to making this whole thing work, because then if you're building a building, you'll know, hey, my tenants are not going to be able to park on the street necessarily. And with that in mind, the developers may decide that they need more parking or not. They can make that decision based on the market. So that it goes along with that. It's not going to just throw everyone out on the street. It's the building owners will make that decision when they build. So we need that, as well as the parking toolkit and the which is not up for today yet, and also TDM in Amendment 51. I support option C for drive-throughs. I think we have plenty of existing drive-throughs. This option allows them to stay and be rebuilt, and it's the best compromise, with new drive-throughs only being allowed for quick vehicle servicing, which makes sense. You have to bring the vehicle to have it serviced. I support all the mapping amendments in Southeast Portland, numbers 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Number 39, the 7th Avenue Bikeway. And I hope that we can get the parking minimums removed with number 34.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Eric Bone. Thank you for the time. I own Metalwood Salvage in the Cully neighborhood at 4311 Northeast Prescott. I purchased the property early this year, and I was kind of late in the comp plan, as far as I'm concerned. So two of the lots, the 4311-4313 and 4323, are going to be rezoned CM1. The third lot that came with that purchase is lot 4337, which is not slated to be rezoned, and I'm asking that it be added to the rezoning to include to be included in the CM1 with the other two properties for future development, just for the ease of future development. And thank you for the time.
So the first two are currently designated CM1.
They're going to be designated CM1 with the new plan. Yes.
And what was the proposal for 4337?
No proposal. It was just staying R7, I believe.
But you'd prefer that to be CM1 as well.
Yes. Okay. So they're all zoned the same.
Yeah. All right. I get it.
It'd be an easy lunch. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. I'm Wendy Chung. I am here on behalf of NWDA, and specifically to testify regarding Amendment 25A pertaining to the RH FAR changes in the Alphabet Historic District. You'll see that on your screens, I think you have a PowerPoint presentation. Hopefully that worked out. We had a little bit of a technical glitch here. But I just have a few points to make that are discussed in the written testimony that you have there. But the primary thing I want to point out is that we asked that all the RH 4-1 be removed from the Alphabet Historic District, which is really only half of the district. The PSC recommended half of what we asked for, which is just the part north of Gleason. If you look at this map that's on in your packet and also on the screen, it really represents a minuscule part of the overall buildable land in Portland. All of the historic districts in their entirety, collectively, including the Alphabet Historic District, only represent 2-3% of all the land. We're talking about a quarter of one district that we're asking to be not downzoned, but right-zoned from 4-1 to 2-1. Therefore, we believe that if we have to choose among the options, option A, which is what PSC had originally recommended, we believe is the appropriate option. And I'll tell you why. Option C is basically spot zoning, and you'll see in the map that it basically is three parcels that may be spot zoned. Mayor Hales, in all due respect, I understand that there's a concern about affordable housing and the potential speculative project that might come in there. But I think it might be a little bit of a short-sighted, again, all due respect, to spot zone a particular site in favor of a speculative project that may or may not happen when we're implementing the 2035 plan that's going to be in place for 20 years. So I would also point out that whether or not it's affordable, you know, this council, this body has been very specific about what can and can't be built in the historic district, and it needs to be compatible. And you'll see that the parcels that you were talking about are surrounded by landmarks. In fact, there's 21 historic buildings all the way around this parcel. And this is not just a phantom concern. You'll see that the developers came in and talked to us at NWDA, and you'll see in the top right-hand corner of your screen what they've proposed as an early concept drawing. It's a 6-story building, because they think they have 4-1. And this is precisely the kind of confusion that we were trying to avoid by right zoning the district. So, I mean, this body specifically said 4-6-story buildings are too big for this parcel. And so what we're asking is that that this council can consider amendment. If you are to do an amendment, I guess option A would be the best. We would prefer that the entire historic district be zone 2-1 for the reasons that we want the this parcel zone 2-1. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
Next, please. Number 38, Richard Ewan. Number 40, Mike Connors. Number 41, Jill Warren. They'll be followed by Peter Dumdiang, Donna Dungyang, and Linda Degman.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Richard Uren. I live in the historic Alphabet District. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of option A also. My detailed reasons for supporting this option are contained in the letter I emailed to you this morning and in a letter I wrote to you last month. I support option A because it clearly states that zoning provisions in a historic district override the base zoning of the area in which the historic district is physically located. I support option A because it affirms the importance and need for historic district zoning. I support option A because it does not allow for spot zoning in historic districts. And finally, I support option A because it, of the three options available, is the only one that addresses the past, the present, and the future by asserting that a historic designation and its preservation is something of real and acknowledged value to the city. I urge you to support option A also. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name's Jill Warren, and I own two historic properties in the Alphabet District, 1815 Northwest Hoyt and 607 Northwest 18th. And I, again, support changing the FAR from 4-1 to 2-1. And that's because a lot of taller buildings are creeping in that really don't fit into the character of our neighborhood. And I'm right across the street from the Ballow and Wright building. And the owners successfully petitioned to get their value of their building decreased from $3 million to $145,000. Claiming the restrictions make their property less valuable and that they're unable to sell. So they are switching gears and partnering with the Northwest Housing Alternatives to provide 160 units for elderly seniors on a lease agreement while demonizing the neighbors, claiming that we're prejudiced against senior housing, and that's just simply not the case. My concern is, because they have a lease agreement with this nonprofit, what would happen if they chose to terminate that agreement and bump up to market rate housing? There's a theory that seniors don't drive, but if they change the status of the tenants, parking will be a nightmare. We all knew what our buildings were when we bought them, and I feel a responsibility to caretake that historic, unique character of the Alphabet District. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, my name is Mike Connors here on behalf of Hayden Island Enterprises, the owners and operators of the Hayden Island Manufactured Home Park. Here to testify in opposition to the bike path proposed on the park property. We understand that there's an amendment to remove that bike path from the Hayden Bay side, and we're asking for a similar amendment for the bike path on our property.
I think there's both, actually.
We've testified at length about the concerns that we have with the bike path, which are both immediate impacts on property values and refinancing, the uncertainty and anxiety that it creates for both the owners and residents of the park, as well as the long-term impacts, which would include if and when the bike path is built, taking out numerous manufactured homes on the park and effectively rendering the park non-viable as a manufactured home park, something that I don't believe the City Council supports. So since we've testified quite a bit about that, I want to focus my testimony today on the other end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is, why does the city want this bike path? What purpose does it serve? Consistently at every level, whether it be talking to staff, planning commission, or with the City Council, when we've raised our concerns, there's been a consistent response. Don't worry about it. It's a line on a planning document. We're not condemning it. We're not planning on building out that bike path, and we don't anticipate there being any redevelopment. We want the manufactured park to stay. If that's the case, why are you deciding to consistently move forward with this plan? My client, the residents of the park, have legitimate concerns. So far, what we've heard from the city is this plan doesn't really matter much because we're not planning to actually construct it. It's a pretty heavy price to pay for something that doesn't appear to be a very high priority or future plan for the city, and we ask that you remove it and consider our concerns. Thank you.
Let's get clarification on that at some point. Maybe it's just these street segments that I don't understand, but I thought we had both amendments in front of us. Maybe I don't remember that correctly, but both the bay portion and the manufactured home park portion. Just the bay portion? Okay. Point clarified. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next, please, 42, Peter Dumdiang, 43, Donna Dumdiang, 44, Linda Degman. They'll be followed by Candy Pierce, Jennifer Furness, Jim Kuffner.
Good afternoon.
Hi. My brother Peter had to leave and go back to work, and okay. I'm in the middle of a shift myself. So I just wanted to say, so
the record first, though.
My name is Donna Dumdang, and I believe this is 2035 about the residences at 1138 and 1126 Southeast Reynolds Street. I actually grew up in 1138, and I'm now a homeowner on the other side of Brooklyn. So grew up there, left, came back. I love the neighborhood. One of the things that this neighborhood is lacking is, for one, a store, restaurants other than, you know, a Mexican restaurant, a couple of small restaurants that have come and gone. I actually think that making a block that is already two-thirds commercial does not detract from the neighborhood. It rather enhances the neighborhood. I think it would be a really big mistake to keep these houses zoned R-point or 2.5 for the next, I believe it's 20 years. Nothing is happening overnight, but to eliminate that from being an option, I think, takes away from the neighborhood. Furthermore, as part of the Brooklyn neighborhood, and my parents are still live in 1138, and my brother and sister-in-law own the house at 1126, they were never notified. The same people who are fighting the change that was already implemented, the CE zoning, to change back to the R-point 2.5, the homeowners themselves weren't notified of this. And we just, I reject their the Brooklyn committee proposing this change. It's already commercial. So.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Linda Degman, and I'm here representing Portland Community College. So thank you for your time this afternoon, and I'll be brief. First off, I want to thank city staff for engaging large institutions in the region in a conversation about the comprehensive plan update. It was an intensive effort and a lot of input and well-received by staff. As you're likely aware, PCC has been engaged in the Southwest Corridor plan for the past few years. We've been asked numerous times by that steering committee to provide a vision of what PCC Sylvania would look like in the future if a regional transportation system is provided in our corridor. We finally did that work in September. We held a two-day visioning workshop that was well attended by PCC staff, faculty, students, staff from Metro, staff from TriMet, staff from City of Portland, and many more, and the neighbors as well. It was a great effort. Through that process, however, it became clear that the CI-1 designation for our Sylvania campus would not allow us to build out a more transit-oriented campus. We are asking that you support Amendment 21 and change the Sylvania designation from CI-1 to CI-2, with the exception of the FAR to 0.75 to 1, versus what it is, CI-2 is 3 to 1, and we don't need that intensive of build-out at our campus. This would allow sufficient capacity for future transit-oriented development while preserving the residential surrounding neighbors. We have submitted a letter to all this as well, so that I emailed that this morning. So thank you for your time. Right,
thank you. Thank you both. Thanks very much. Okay, let's move on.
45, Candy Price. 46, Jennifer Furness. 47, Jim Kuffner. They'll be followed by Christy White, Richard Larson, and Giselle Johnson.
Welcome. Whoever would like to start us off. Mr. Kupfer's being very gracious and offering you the first chance.
Please. You were her first. I stood behind you in lines.
That's true. Hi, my name is Jennifer Furness, and I am here to talk about circling the block. I don't like it. We already know from a lot of well research, and I know you're familiar with it, Donald Schrupp's work in Cruising for Parking from UCLA, that 30% of the cars in downtown America are circling the block, 8 to 75% in high density areas. As our density moves out into our neighborhoods, this is a definite concern we're already seeing, especially in the Division neighborhood. We know that residential traffic density is directly related to preterm and low birth rate children in those neighborhoods. So it's really important that we manage this effectively at the beginning rather than scrambling at the end and going, what are we going to do now that we have a health problem? We know that there is damage to DNA in sperm. We know in utero we have premature heart defects, low birth rate. We know in infants and children whose lungs are disproportionately large to their size, we have immune system problems, neurodevelopment problems, asthma in inner city children, and children who live near freeways, children who live in high density areas. The EPA already knows that 80 to 100,000 deaths a year are caused by particulates, and this is just the beginning of really us getting into air pollution relating to health. So with regards to the parking over 30 spaces, I am wholeheartedly for bike transit. I'm wholeheartedly for really getting our transit systems in place, but it's a part and package, and I've heard earlier that it is part of a progressive package, and we need to be managing the street parking before we start the other section. I mean, if we do one without the other, it's going to hurt us down the long run, and it's a long, something we're going to have to deal with for the next 100 years. You know, once the building's up, it's there, and we already hear in the Division neighborhood, well, we already parked our cars, so what are we going to do now? Do we want that for the whole city? No, we want to be preventative and progressive and be a great city and do both parts together, not one or the other.
Let me just clarify, are you saying we should have some off-street parking or not?
I think that we need to manage the parking in neighborhoods, permits, et cetera, before we start allowing for basically depending that the new residents park their cars in the neighborhoods. So if you have a building with 60 units, we really can't responsibly do that without parking unless we have a parking system in place for those streets and managing it effectively. And we also know with the inclusive zoning, I've been talking with the Housing Bureau, and they're already exempt from parking. So if you go from a 30 unit to a 33 unit with a 10%, you don't have to do three parking spaces. So we already have that built in. And I just would hate to see something rolled out that could have really negative long-term effects if it's not done holistically.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Candy Price. I'm here today for, I believe it's 38, for the Hayden Island residents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have all this fancy talk and zoning verbiage that all these people know. I just am going to speak like 18 years ago. I got very little amount of money from my grandmother when she passed away, went straight to Jansen Beach and bought myself a little rundown manufactured home out there and had two girls, single mom, you know, did the best I could, upgraded it, made it a good little valuable investment for the members and my neighbors in the community. Going forward today, our houses are not mobile, obviously. We don't have the money to move them. As you know, there's a lot of lower income residents out there, including myself. I am a certified with the state caregiver, and I also own my own housekeeping business, very small. And I do take care of a lot of the residential people out there that are older and do things for them because they don't have a lot of money. They don't have the money to move if this bike path goes through. I mean, it's a real big concern. So I guess quite a few people have installed enough trust in me to put their signatures on a piece of paper for you today so that you would take out this consideration. This, we're talking 120 people up to 440. I'm not going to throw numbers about the housing crisis at you and everything. You guys are fully aware. I'm just going to ask you, as I was raised to respect my elders, and that I would ask you to just give us a little respect too and not displace us, because we have nowhere to go. We can't move these homes. And also, it's already been brought to your attention that the other side of the island has already have their amendment proposals and from you. But if I could also say, this is protected wetlands out there too. There are nesting eagles out there, and they're doing quite well without a bike path or any other things to, you know, upset them. So, yes. So, we're just asking that you delete Nix. Please do not put in this bike path. It needs to. It's just so unsuccessful, and with the housing crisis that's already there, we have a lot of concerned residents and. That's what we're asking.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on behalf of your neighbors as well.
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Kuffner, welcome.
Good afternoon, mayors and commissioners. Thank you for being here. I'm Jim Kuffner, representing the University of Portland today. And as you might imagine, the university has been very attentive to the CI zone process that has been developing over the last 2 years or so. And we took the opportunity about a month or so ago to submit a letter with some concerns. There were five of them. Two have been addressed because they were more interpretational, and three involved amendments. We do have two amendments that are before you, and Christy White, who will follow me in just a moment, number 31 and 33, will address those. But I wanted to speak about two other items. And somewhere along the line during the deliberations by staff or review of staff, there seemed to be a sense that the University of Portland was seeking these amendments without due consideration or consultation with our neighborhood association. And I really started to scratch my head on that, because we have been blessed with the greatest relationship with our neighborhood over the last 15 years. And so I went to their last board meeting, and Tom Karwacki, the chair, vice chair and land use chair, will be here shortly. He already submitted very strong comments on our support, because we went and sought that support because staff was thinking we weren't communicating. But in fact, we are, and we always do. I attend all of their meetings. The one thing that we did not receive, and we're still a little bit concerned about, is in the map and the zoning, we worked very hard to get a boundary that included all of the really realistic and logical properties that would the university needed. Two of them were private residents that were not owned by us. The other was the McCormick and Baxter property. Those residents came forward willingly and included their property in the boundary, M&B the same. Now the zone is proposed that those three properties, the CI zone, would not extend to those properties. And we're a little bit concerned that why are they being left out when it makes more sense for them to be included? And if we need to change the zone later, we can do that. So we're just asking basically to retain what we had in our conditional use master plan that our neighbors has approved and the hearing officer approved as well.
So thanks for being here. Hope you... while the record's open, if you have anything else to submit, you know, from property owners in addition to yourself, that'd be helpful. I think the, one of the issues that we're hung up on, frankly, in that case is whatever what policy statement we would be making if we included non-university property or non-hospital property in a zone designation for an institution. Mm-hmm. The property's not actually entitled to the institution yet.
Right.
Are we, the city, interfering in a real estate transaction that hasn't been consummated yet? Those are questions that are lurking around your situation. It may be kind of an anomaly here, and that I think most of our other campus institutional properties, they own it all.
You know, that's a really good point, Mayor. I appreciate that. And that is something that came up in discussions of our conditional use master plan. And we specifically worked with the two private property owners, of the residential ones in particular, and then with M&B, to include that property within the boundary that the master plan, however, did not affect those properties or was not in place for those
didn't
properties until and unless the university owned it.
Right.
I think it, at least to my mind, it would make sense to go ahead and rezone it, the CI,
but say it doesn't apply until and unless the university comes into ownership of those properties. So
okay,
that would be our take.
All right, appreciate the suggestion. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Next, 48, Christy White, 49, Richard Larson, 50, Joselle Johnson.
50.
They will be followed by Vicky Skierha, Jessica Richmond, and Michaels Smira, I believe. And just for your information, we have 65.
65 total. Not 65 left. All right, Ms. White, I think you're next because you're following.
Thank you. Christy White for the University of Portland, 5000 Willamette Boulevard. Just commenting on the two amendments that are proposed, and thank you, Mayor Hales, and the rest of council for listening to our testimony and making this proposal. We support, of course, Amendment 31 and 33. 31 is about changing the street setback along Willamette Boulevard for the one portion of the street that had imposed a 200-foot setback. And I think there was a little bit of misunderstanding that led to this. It was lifted from our conditional use master plan, which doesn't have a building setback in that location. In fact, what it says is that's an area where we didn't plan to build in the next 10 years that had athletic fields on it. And because we're going from, we're kind of changing the paradigm, right? We're going from a conditional use master plan that applies for 10 years to a forever zone. It was never intended that there would be a building setback there. So we very much appreciate that this proposal under 31 to move it from a 200-foot setback to a zero setback like the rest of the Willamette frontage. And then the other issue was on the building length standard. We don't have one on our campus at this point. Rather, we have design standards for our frontage along Willamette Boulevard. We like those design standards. The University Park Neighborhood Association likes those design standards. And what happened in the CI zone is what was imposed was 100 or 110. It's a different number in different locations in the code. Maximum building length. And we talked to you about why that building length was really inconsistent with the design pattern there and the problems it brings for a dorm development across the street, across the 100-foot right-of-way on Willamette. You've proposed in Amendment 33 to increase that from 110 to 200 feet, and we can live with that. So we support Amendment 31 and 33 and hope that we can take another look at this boundary issue that Mr. Kuffner spoke about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, Richard Larson. I'm here today on Amendment 53, asking you to support that for the Markham Hill node, commercial mixed-use node. We have a property there at 10th and Southwest Gibbs, and we believe this is a down zone to a CM1. There's very little retail on that hill. We've got development plans. We haven't submitted, honestly, waiting for the construction cycle to ease up a little bit. So I think that we're counting on the zone we had was a CS. We thought the CM2 was very similar. We consider this a down zone, and we hope that you see that when you and adopt that amendment for that zone. Also included some handouts on some other properties I represent. I know I've only got 2 minutes, and it's a long day, so I'll leave you with those. They're not on your list currently, and I'll be working on those in the coming months.
Okay, this is helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Joselle Johnson, and I'm actually a neighbor within the Alphabet District, and I am here in support of option A, which is the 2-to-1 FAR. My reason for not being in support of the 4-to-1 is I believe it changes the face of the historic district. I've been a resident in this neighborhood for 27 years. That's why I purchased my property. That's why I've stayed. So I think actually changing that changes the intent of the Alphabet District, and I would like to make sure that we support that as we have in past and with our discussion with you. Again, with the erosion of the continued development in the face of the historic district, it's been very difficult. As a neighbor, I do want to say I support the affordable housing. I just to support the affordable housing within the guidelines. So working within the actual overlay within the act zoning, love to have them there, just not a six-story building.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both very much. Okay, next three.
51, Vicky Skierha, 52, Jessica Richmond, 53, Mike Smira. They'll be followed by Marcus Mead, Tony Schwartz, and Marty Stevens.
Come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Vicki Scria, and I live on Northwest Hoyt in the Alphabet Historic District, and I just want to confirm like what other people in Northwest have also said. And I just would so much like us to be able to get to a place where we can move constructively forward with this project that's proposed. And even though the FAR is under consideration, if it gets changed, there's still the overlay zoning. And when the city council looked at the demolition proposal before, those overlay zones, I called the city and confirmed that they are still in effect. And what we really want is the 2-to-1 to be confirmed because it's consistent with what would be allowed with the overlay zoning. And I strongly support affordable housing and historic preservations. The piece of paper that you got from me on the reverse side of it, I looked up tons of examples where affordable housing is developed in historic preservation. They work together. And I think, because I have a background in affordable housing, that a project of about 45 units or so would fit on that site, and it would increase the number of units on that site. There are currently 6 dramatically, and it would work. And if we can just at least get the 2-to-1 and work together and be constructive, and neighbors would be happy to work with the nonprofit and come up with a good complex, it would be so wonderful, and it would avoid a lot of contentiousness.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to the council chambers, Ms. Richmond.
Thank you. I'm Jessica Richmond. You also have a letter from me. As you know, I worked for you as a planner for almost 30 years, and for almost that long, I've been a resident and owner in the Alphabet Historic District, so I'm speaking today as a resident and owner and also as a very experienced and some would call brilliant planner.
I would call brilliant.
Well,
I did, actually.
I'm talking, of course, to the FAR and the Alphabet Historic District, and I agree with the NWDA and Vicki and others who've spoken in favor of reducing it all to 2-to-1. As a planner, I'd like us to step back and remember that planning involves zooming in on the detail and out to the big picture, and I think we've lost a lot of the big picture in focusing on this site and what might happen on that one. And I think we need to remember that the reason that the neighborhood and others have asked for the reduction to 2-to-1 is, as Vicki said, to provide a clear expectation that if you're in the historic district with RH zoning, you're not going to be able to build that 6-story building and be compatible. So you won't meet the design guidelines, and you're going to go through a lot of frustration. And so it's really asking for truth in zoning, and that's the big picture part. I think we're talking about compatibility and clarity and also making decisions, again, good planning, based on circumstances of the land and the neighborhood, not on individual potential possible maybe proposals by the owners of particular sites. To say that 4-to-1, based on that possible maybe development, is not good planning, and that's something that Portland is proud of and is known for. And we need to look at this with dispassion rather than we want to help these particular property owners out or we don't want to get in the way of a particular project. And finally, just a note that this 2-to-1 FAR would not take effect until January 2018. And so any serious project is going to at least get in a preliminary application by then, and so would still be considered under the 4-to-1. So changing 2-to-1 will not knock things out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good to see you.
Okay. We have 54, Marcus Mead, 55, Tony Schwartz, 56, Marty Stevens. They'll be followed by Tim Ramos, Garrett Nefson and even Heitman.
Welcome. I'd like to go first. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Marcus Mead, and I live stumbling distance from Pok Pok Restaurant, which